Welcome to the Locke Associates Group series of podcasts, where you'll get to know our experts, who will take you through our legal, HR, wellbeing, and mediation services, giving you a deeper insight as to why people are our business.
I'm Paul Harvey, and welcome to the Locke Associates Group series of podcasts. Today, we're covering diversity and inclusion in a business and the keys to success. Now, I'm delighted to have with me Roisin Kavanagh and Sally Beddoe from Locke Associates. Good to talk to you both. Could I start with you, Sally, just to briefly tell us what your role is with Locke Associates?
Hi, Paul. I'm the business manager for HR Advise Me and Locke Wellbeing, which are two of the businesses within Locke Associates Group. And I head up the HR consultants and the wellbeing specialists.
Thank you, Sally. And over to you, Roisin.
I am an employment solicitor in Locke Employment Law, which is part of the Locke Associates Group. In my role, I act for employers and individuals in all types of employment law problems.
Thanks, Roisin. So, diversity and inclusion, the keys to success. Can I start with you, Sally, to give me a definition, please?
So, diversity and inclusion is about looking at and recognising the differences that people have within themselves, whether that's a physical or a mental difference within the workplace, and ensuring that all those people have the access to succeed and be the best that they can be.
I'm going to sort of ask at the very beginning of this discussion how COVID has made us rethink about diversity and inclusion. What impact has COVID had on these definitions and the thinking behind these topics?
I think it's raised a few more issues that have become more apparent. So certainly mental health issues have become more apparent within the workplace during the isolation period. There was a big Black Lives Matter campaign that started at the beginning of the isolation, which has obviously raised more concerns and actions for people to follow through on. And then there's around having the vaccine. So some people medically can't have the vaccine, and therefore are they included in coming back to work if you have to come back to work and have the vaccine or wear a mask? So it does touch on quite a few new issues for us, really.
These are going to be ongoing discussions, aren't they? For sure.
They are, yeah. Definitely. And particularly at the moment, because people are thinking about a return to the workplace and what that looks like. So are people returning wearing masks? Are people returning having had a vaccine? There's the impact of long COVID on people and whether that's going to have an effect. And any policy or procedure that the employers agree to needs to think about people who can't be part of, let's call it, the norm group for some reason that could maybe affect them going forward.
So why diversity and inclusion? Why are they so important beyond policies and programmes? Roisin?
So I think there's a few reasons for that. I think that we've got, from an employer's point of view, firstly, it's making sure that they attract the right employees, that they have a wide range of ideas within their business. It increases employee engagement in terms of their own workforce. And it means that they've got a wider talent pool to pick from to make sure they're hiring the best employees. There's also an argument that it increases an employer's reputation to its customers and clients if it can boast that it's got a diverse and inclusive workforce working within the company.
So as a business, how can you communicate effectively out into the marketplace that you are a company that really do believe in diversity and inclusion and practice it?
I think it's about thinking about the image that you're portraying outside and actually believing in it. There are many things that you can do. Firstly, if you look at the images that you use on your website or in any recruitment material, you know, are they inclusive of different groups within society? Do you reflect your customer base and the locality that you live with those pictures? Also, in terms of the actions that you do. So if you look at your policies and your procedures, do they refer to different groups of people? Do you use the right terminology? Are you up to date with things? Do you report on stories that reflect different groups within your business? And also, do the products and services that you provide reach the whole marketplace? Or is there any way that they are discriminatory to certain groups?
And Roisin, you know, does this role fall into the lap of HR, or is this a much wider role that other managers should be undertaking?
I think this is definitely a much wider role. In terms of HR, they're there to help you create those policies and procedures, but it's for managers to implement those policies and procedures, firstly internally for employees, but as we've already touched upon, so that you're providing the right message from your business. That's important that all staff are trained in terms of the diversity and inclusion messages that you want your business to portray.
And Sally, is there still this challenge that working remotely on Zoom, which may still happen going forward, is this going to challenge the progress of the way this is audited?
I'm not sure really, because using Zoom, it is replacing a face-to-face meeting. I suppose you're not picking up always on the more subtle cues that you would have in a face-to-face conversation. I think what's important is that you live and breathe what you believe. So you think about different people and different people's circumstances and don't always use your norm as everybody else's norm when you're doing things. So if somebody's maybe got kids running around in the background on their Zoom, then you need to think about how do you include those people in your team meetings when they've got different care and responsibilities from you. Just practical things like that, really. But it's about changing people's perceptions to not believe that their norm is the norm of everybody else that they're dealing with.
And Roisin, in terms of the size of companies that this is relevant to, can this be from 5 people in a company upwards? I'm interested to know what size businesses should be reflecting on this.
At Lock Associates Group, we act for a wide range of clients, all of different sizes. And I would say that this is applicable for all businesses, no matter what size. While there's no legal requirement to have an equality and diversity policy in place, there's no direct penalty for not having one. This is something we recommend in staff handbooks as a minimum for all our clients. So no matter what the size, this is definitely relevant for everyone.
I suppose you're getting different sets of people making contact with you, employers looking to improve the way they practice diversity and inclusion, and then you're going to get employees perhaps complaining about the employer that they're not practicing these correct policies.
The employer's responsibility is to make sure they treat everybody equally and with equal respect, and they're really keen to do that, particularly with the high profile campaigns that are going on at the moment. And the employees will complain if they are not treated in that way, and we deal with grievances from employees as well as the policy and strategy side of things for the employers.
And are you seeing any kind of trend that's building now in any one direction? Is there evidence that employees are much more aware of maybe their rights, or are they just happy to get back to work?
I definitely think there's an argument that people are more aware of their rights at the moment. There are trends across employment law. So at the moment, we are seeing an increase in people making flexible working requests, for example. And we expect that to increase when there is a push to return to the office, that people will want to continue working at home, for example, or maybe just to change their hours. So we're expecting employers to see a rise in these flexible working requests, which they then have to review and deal with and follow a process to make the decision on whether that will be granted or not.
So Sally, when it comes to putting things into action on behalf of employers, can you cover some of the action points that you would now recommend that they become aware of and should put into place?
The first thing that they would need to do is to have an equality and inclusivity policy within their handbook. And that would set their stall out, really, and let their employees know what the standards and expectations are. They'd also need a really good grievance procedure, which would protect the employees if they felt that any of the policies and procedures had been broken. And then finally, I think it's about more than just the policies and procedures. So it's about living and challenging things that don't fit. So instead of ignoring things that go on in the workplace, maybe ignoring a passive aggressive remark to somebody that could be construed perhaps as racist or sexist, it's about establishing a culture where those things aren't ignored and they are challenged in the right way and they're nipped in the bud from the very start.
And Roisin, do you think actually emotions are going to be running quite high now once we start to get back to normal? Do you sort of foresee that perhaps people are going to get maybe more upset than they should be? I'm fascinated to know if emotional turbulence going on in the workplace, considering everything we've been through.
I think we've already seen that already happening during the pandemic. We've seen people acting in a more irrational way, perhaps. As I say, that's already been continuing. And I'm sure as employers start to make more decisions about return to the workplace, I can see that happening more and more. People maybe have an expectation now that they will be able to continue working at home. And that's unfortunately not always the case.
Sally, do you think there might be a need for larger companies to actually employ someone that specialises in diversity and inclusion? Are you recommending that?
I think maybe some of the larger companies could benefit from it. I don't think there's a particular need for it. I think it's more about establishing the culture of your organisation and getting everybody involved in that so that it's on more than one person's head, I suppose, and it's part of your day-to-day life. Equality and diversity is there and it's included in everything you do across the board, across every level, right from the board at the top, right down to the person at the bottom. That would be more beneficial to an organisation than having one particular person responsible for it. The way to deal with that is to have a really comprehensive and up-to-date training programme. We recently had a case that went to court, and one of the benefits was that it was around a diversity claim. One of the benefits was that the organisation had done training with the whole team. However, the judge did say that this training does need to be kept up to date and current in order for it to be effective.
How do you define up to date?
Well, I think times have moved on, haven't they? If you have equality and diversity training, perhaps as part of your induction programme, and that was 5 years ago, then you can't just train somebody once and expect them to then remember all those things 5 years down the line. It's about keeping people up to date and current with things, whether that's by quick refresher training or whether it's by content in your internal newsletter. It's talking about these things with people all the time so that it's always something that people are thinking about.
Roisin, do Lock Associates actually go into companies and conduct that training?
Absolutely, that's something we offer to our clients. We have training that we offer, as you say, as well as that sort of basic equality training for when people start. There's also training, which I know Sally offers, called Nip It in the Bud training, which helps managers spot issues and deal with them at the first sign rather than letting them stew and fester.
And Sally, culture and values of a company, how should they improve or change or embed into their culture and values and core values that take care of diversity and inclusion and cover those?
It's about understanding who's working for you, who you want to work for you, and who your customer is. And as long as you embed that into your values, then you will cover off equality and diversity within that, because it's about looking at the society that you're living in, the people around you, how you want to interact with the different groups of people within society, and embedding that in your values. But more than just a piece of paper, it's about then what can you do as an organisation to keep those values alive? Don't just put them on your website. You know, are they embedded in your appraisal systems? Are you measuring people's success at work because they're living your values?
And Roisin, do you think by actually, as you say, Sally, it's got to be more than just a few lines on your website. Do you think that businesses will check out those credentials before they do business with you and want to see diversity and inclusion built into your ethos?
I think that is something people are becoming more interested in and wanting to make sure that they're interacting with businesses who have similar core values to their own business, for example. I definitely think that that's something that's becoming more commonplace.
I can see that happening, actually. There are certain instances that I'm aware of that that's taking place. So, Sally, COVID-related discrimination, inequalities faced by women, could you elaborate on that and expand on that?
So I think during the COVID and the lockdown period, women have perhaps suffered more in that they have been the chief carer for children who haven't been at school, which has affected people's ability to work from home and homeschool at the same time. And then also just on a more domestic level, I hate to say it's a return to the 1950s housewife situation, but women are more naturally the ones that have done the caregiving in the home, whether that's making lunches for everybody, doing the cleaning with more people around in the home. I think there's certainly been more of an impact on that role during the lockdown. I don't think it's necessarily the same in every household. I know I've moaned very much in my household about making lunch every day, but I do think that there is a thought that women have slipped back a little bit into being that caregiver. While both men and women are at home working, the woman is working and doing all the other things as well.
In terms of how the pandemic and COVID has affected women, research has also shown that more women have been made redundant than men during the pandemic, and that women were more likely to be furloughed. So I think there are a few reasons for that. Obviously, some of the industries, such as retail and hospitality, employs more females. But also, the furlough scheme could be used for employees who were unable to work because they have caring responsibilities, such as having children who were off school, as Sally mentioned. For those reasons, I do think we've noticed an impact of COVID, especially on women, over the last year.
You're obviously very much a barometer for this sort of unfortunate result of the pandemic. So Sally, looking forward, say for the next 12 months, or let's say 12 months after we're all back to work and functioning to a full extent, do you see any sort of trends coming out of maybe through the next 12 months that Locke Associates are sort of aware of, you kind of earmarked to keep an eye on, still based on this diversity and inclusion topic? And we still had the keys to success as well built into that. So what should employers be aware of in the next 12 months to make sure they're still on the growth path?
There's a really big trend for employers and businesses to work with and be an ethical business. So to be a business that looks after its people, looks after the climate, looks after the environment. And a big part of that is looking after the community that you're living in. To do that, you need to have an inclusive and diversity policy, practices, values, because that will reflect all those things.
I think it's a very interesting area now. And Rasheem, maybe just to wrap this one up, from what Sally said, this almost becomes part of the corporate social responsibility of a company.
I'd agree with that. I definitely think it's something that's becoming more important. And in terms of the law, there's the Equality Act, which is the base for the discrimination law. But all of these diversity and inclusion policies are going that bit further to introduce additional protections and help the business and help the employees to go that bit further to ensure that everyone's as protected as possible within the business.
Okay, well, look, thank you very much indeed, both of you. If people want to find out more about this discussion and other information that they want to get from Locke Associates, could you please give us some contact information?
You can find loads of blogs on our website at lockassociates.co.uk. That's L-O-C-H, associates.co.uk. Or you can just ring us for a chat.
Thank you very much. Sally Beddo and Rasheen Kavanagh from Locke Associates Group, thank you very much for an extremely interesting discussion on very important issues in business today. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you for listening to this Locke Associates Group podcast. For more information about our award-winning team and why our services are shaped to meet your business needs, please go to lockassociates.co.uk.